Yeah, good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. It's that time of the early morning that we look at the affairs of business and everything that affect our bread and butter. We are greeting you from your number one favorite talk radio station, that is Eagle FM Namibia. How are you doing? What are you doing? And also, where are you? And we must be able to wake up and focus on the game, focus on the future. Because you cannot afford this time. You cannot afford to sleep this time. Other people are already at the gym. Other people have already started, have already finished their business proposal. Other people have already sent that application. Where other people have already made profit, while you are just sleeping. By the time you are waking up, people are done with their transactions already. People are arranging coffee meetings for, you know, business purposes while you are still sleeping. Because if you look at the time that you have and also the time that other people have on earth, you realize that in most cases we have enough time. In most cases we have almost the same time, but the impact is always different. You realize that there are always those who are making the best out of it. That's why wherever you are, whatever stage you are in life, make sure that you do your best. Every day you wake up, you do your best. If you are going to work, go and work and do your best. If you are a senior citizen, you must all do your best. Yes, sir. The Prime Minister always saying, dust must be seen. We should not just be speaking. We must see dust of progress. And the question is that in Namibia, where is the dust of progress? Is dust being seen or is here to be seen? Because the important aspect is that the dust has to be seen. Yeah, in today's conversation, we'll continue looking at infrastructure, trade infrastructure, especially from the R7. There will be joined by an analyst from Monasa Advisory, that is Tiona Kasole, especially to speak about Africa trade infrastructure. We'll look at Africa Finance Corporation Report 2026. And we'll be able to look at where are we standing as a country. Do we have what is needed, especially to get the way we want to get into? And also, where are we falling behind? Because the main important question is not about what we are doing well. The main important question is that where do we need to fix? Just before we look at continental affairs, you know, there is something that I wanted to talk about, especially the case that happened in in Okahandja, where a 25-year-old woman was gang raped by, you know, by nine young men, young men, age 15 to 16. And we must come to the point that if we want to fix our country, we must first come to the point that, you know, we must accept that we have failed as a society. We should not blame those young people. I'm not saying they are not right. Get me correctly. We must also look at ourselves and accept that this is a sign of a broken society. It's a sign of a broken family. It's a sign of, you know, a broken town. It's also a sign of, ineffectiveness also in terms of framework. Either it's parenting, either it's the legal framework. Because if students or children who are supposed to be in school, and when you look at the Namibian Constitution, which is indicating that, and also the legal framework that is on education, to say compulsory education until the age of 16. So compulsory primary education until the age of 16. Then what happened between that? Because these people are supposed to be in school, but these are the people who are gang raping. And the question is that, what drug did they use? Or is it excitement? Or we are just turning our country into, not only Sodom or Gomorrah, just become a, somebody may also want to ask to say, so Okahandja, the throne of darkness, because things that have been happening in Okahandja, it cannot be explained. There was a time Okahandja was in the hand of, the hand of the police. Even the president went there to look at what's really happening. Total patrol and control. No results coming out, but it is happening. What is happening in Okahanja? It's a sign of a broken society. And if we are not coming to the point of accepting that, then we are not going to fix that problem. And it will come to us one by one. Because even elders now are scared of going to Okahanja. Because if something happened to you, it's most unlikely that, you know, the suspect will not be found. These are just young people that are found. What about children that were just killed in just an open space? And up to now, there is still no suspect. And you are already asking yourself to say, where are we going as a society? How can we fix this thing? Because it's not only evil, but it's a sign that we have failed, not only in upgrading or not only in educating what now is regarded as a boy child. But in my understanding, I think the concept of a boy child came on when the society realized that we have failed with empowerment. We over-empower the ladies, then we left the boy children. But it was just supposed to be raising a society correctly. Not to say the girl shared this side, the boy shared this side. That's why now, even things that we see in Namibia, things that were not accepted in 1990, when you look at them now in the country, you realize to say, you ask yourself a critical question, where are we going as a society? Things that were unacceptable in Namibia, now they become the law. And you can't say anything. Because you get the fund. There is a donor behind everything which is happening. But are we going to sell our country for money? You don't need to sell the country for money. We need to make sure that, you know, we take care of our children. Because if people who are supposed to be in school now, where the education is free, at the graduate level is subsidized, these are the children that are raping. Gang raping. Because in fact, in 10 years, these are the people who are supposed to become parents already. In 10 years, these are the people who are supposed to take care of this country. But if you look at 9 gang rapers between the age of 15, 16, you realize that you really have an issue that you need to deal with immediately. And if it's not dealt with, then a lot of things may still come. Because coming from the media and engaging with a lot of people, I start realizing that there is actually a lot of things that are happening. It's only that the media cannot report everything, but there's a lot of things that are happening. When things are not reported in the public, doesn't mean that they are not happening. It's only that there's a lot of signs of a broken society in Namibia. But that is something that should be looked at. And it's not only about research, but something that should be acted upon. Because putting people into jail is curing the sign, but fixing the society is a long-term impact. Because have you ever met somebody in a society, can be in town or at the village, and you just think, no, this one is only that he's not jailed, but or maybe committed a lot of crime, it's only that he's not caught. Yeah, is that you have really a broken society. But yeah, let us look at what is happening. What is happening in the continent of Africa? What is happening in the world? Today is a surprising, a game changer, especially when it comes to the conflict between Iran and Israel. Like Iran is getting an upper hand. And yesterday Trump has admitted that one of the U.S. helicopter or one of the U.S. Helicopter was shot down. And the way he said it is that, one of the U.S. The highly sophisticated Apache helicopters were shot down over the Strait of Hormuz, and he said, the greatest army in by far have lost one of the helicopters. And you can see that even at the talking point, Iran is like it's ready for war. And the question is that for how long? And it also seems like Trump is not really interested anymore in terms of war. But it seems like when it comes to that aspect, there's a lot of things which is happening. And also to look at the long-term impact in terms of this, because it's no more about who is winning. It's no more about who has control, but it's about us too, as a country, to say, when this war is prolonged, how are we going to survive? Because if you look at what we spoke about yesterday in terms of international trade statistics, there is an indication that the Middle East is still our greatest supplier. But this will make it very difficult. But let us look at this case where Trump said, you know, the helicopter of
necessity respond.
Helicopter of, you know, of the greatest army in the world was shot down. He also indicated that, you know, the United States must and will respond to this action. But what is indicated is that all the pilots that were in the helicopter indicated that they are safe. And the question is that how many, what is the value of the lost of war from both sides? Because war is never, it's never a good thing. But let us look at what have happened and move forward, especially between the U.S. and Iran.
To this attack. Thank you. President Trump just provided an update on that U.S. military helicopter crash. He said, I have just been informed by our great military that last night Iranians shot down one of our highly sophisticated Apache helicopters while patrolling over the Strait of Hormuz. There were two pilots involved. Both are safe and uninjured. Nevertheless, the United States must, of necessity, respond to this attack. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. I want to go straight to the White House to Elena Treen. Elena, what more are you hearing about what the president might be referring to in terms of responding?
Yeah, I think what this response will entail is obviously the key question here. We haven't gotten any more information other than what the president had just shared on social media. But I think one of the key parts of this post, Dana, is that he is saying that it was the Iranians that shot down this Apache helicopter. That is more information, of course, than we have gotten. This statement from CENTCOM this morning, all it had said was that the cause of the incident is under investigation, not giving any information about who was responsible. Well, Trump is now saying it is the Iranians who were responsible for downing that helicopter and that they have to respond, the United States, out of necessity. Very much unclear, again, what he means by this, if he means potential strikes or something else. But that can definitely, of course, be a major complicating factor after a very few tense days in this war, really, between after, of course, we saw Israel and Iran exchanging fire, the president getting them to back off. Now he's been optimistic. The latest we heard from him this morning, very optimistic about a deal, but now saying he needs to respond to this. And I do want to provide some information, well, about the importance of these Apaches, because this marks the downing of this helicopter, the first time an Apache was lost since this war began. Typically, they have been responsible for precision attacks on some of these Iranian small boats we know that have been operating in the Strait of Hormuz, the United States using them as part of the Iranian blockade. So all to say, it's unclear what this response is going to be. I think we have a lot of work to do in our reporting with our.
Yeah, that is what is happening, especially between U.S. and Iran. So we are going to respond. But that is Iran for you. The helicopter is roaming around in your backyard. You know, I used to say Islamic Revolutionary Guard is equipped, and it's for the first time in the history will tell who is going to be not only the survivor, not only the victor. but who is going to be on the good side of history when the history is going to be written of what is happening now in the Middle East. And remember, just on Monday, when Iran started attacking each other with Israel, you realize to say the price of oil has increased. The global price of oil has, jumped 3%. With 3%, I mean, and that should already tell you to say, when it comes to Namibia, we must expect a lot of things, especially this month or early next month, because we depend on that system. We depend so much on that system. When you look at our main import commodity, it's petroleum product. Our main import commodity is petroleum product. And that is exactly something that we should worry about, because if you are not worrying about this, you do not know how we are going to survive. Because remember, heavy is the head that is wearing the crown, or the head that is the responsibility. The pressure will be on our Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy to say, how are you going to navigate? Are you still going to use more money to protect local commodities, or you are going to allow this time the price just to for the citizens to deal with it, or the consumers to deal with it? And how are we going to navigate through this? But Sun Tzu, one of Chinese writer and thinkers, who existed 1,000 years ago, is indicating to us, especially regarding war, to say, don't prolong war. If you prolong war, your enemy will be able to understand you properly. Then you are prone to defeat. Because if you like fighting for a very long time, your enemy will understand you. That's why if you ask a young person now, to say, what is the greatest army in the world? It's most likely to give you different answers. Because by then we knew, if USA want to pick you up, they will pick you up in 24 hours, then they are gone. But the prolonged war in the Middle East will also bring a lot of holes, a lot of loopholes, because in the world of technology, people will study you. Don't think you are ahead. People will study you. And once they study you, they also find a weapon that can take you down. But that is exactly what is happening. Especially when U.S. start losing, its war crafts, its war planes. If you calculate from the beginning of the war on the 28th of February 2026, and you put all those assets together, it's not 500 million, it's not 1 billion, it's a lot of billions. You're losing not only ammunition, but also military assets. You speak about military radars, you speak about jamming system, you speak about rocket detectors and many others. You speak about advanced technology. But yeah, let's look at a short commercial break, then we come back to Africa, especially when we are looking at new development, Africa, the way it's dealing with its developmental agenda, the way it's dealing with social issues. And we'll start with Kenya. Especially the fight between the government and its people. Government and its people. Government is saying the United States is the greatest ally, supporting us. The citizens are saying no. And there is one Kenyan who is shot in the head at the protest of Ebola Center. But we'll look into that, especially after a short commercial break. However, you can still engage us in the studio at 0832-888-401-083. 288-401. Stay tuned. We are here until the hour of 8.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle staff. FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. It's 26 minutes past the hour of six, and as I indicated, from the hour of eight, there we'll be joined by Theo Nakasore. It's an economic researcher and analyst. We'll look at the trade infrastructure. We'll look at the content of Africa Finance Corporation report of 2026 that is saying, no, Africa, you don't have a problem with investment. You don't have a problem with investment. You just have a problem with coordination. You already have investment. You have a strong asset base at home. You also have a strong domestic, opportunity that you can invest from. But the infrastructures are not coordinated. Countries are not cooperating. They are not working hand in hand. We'll look into that. But on the other news, stated that in Kenya, a Kenyan was shot in the head at protests over US Ebola Center. Kenya protesters and police crashed yesterday, and officers fired tear gas at hundreds of people demonstrating against Ebola quarantine center being built for US citizens in a tourist town, and they made several stated that the police made several arrests. And one person was shot in the head. And Kenyans are saying they have never reported any case of Ebola. But why U.S. is spending billions of dollars, especially building an Ebola center, where it's going to be handling its people, particularly those which are coming from DRC. And you can see, you don't know. Seems like when it comes to governance, William Ruto and his people, they have been not on each other's neck, but they have been crashing in a lot of issues. Either it's tax laws, either it's laws regarding, adjustment in terms of oil price. And now it's a health deal that is looking at that. But remember also that just yesterday, despite of everything what's happening, Kenya signed a health deal with the U.S. Signed a healthy deal with the U.S., which has a value of $1.6 billion U.S. dollar. And also know that if somebody is feeding you, somebody is giving you money, who are you to say no? There's always a saying that somebody who, feed you has power to control you, which is absolutely true. Because the President, William Ruto, is standing on this side saying, no, we cannot say. There are things that our good American friends are doing to us. And we cannot allow our country not to accept that. And at the other side, there is money coming in. The other side, there are people shot in the head. And you're asking yourself to say, is Ruto going to see the second term? I'm not saying I don't want him to see the second term, but I'm saying, is he going to see the second term? Particularly when somebody came to power with a ticket of a hustler. And his campaign was very interesting. The ticket of a hustler to say, Kenya, a son of a peasant, can also become a president. And that was also a direct shoot down of Uhuru Kenyatta, who came from not only a royal family, but the political elite. But looking at what is happening with Ruto and his people, maybe they are going to get things in order. Maybe they are going to get things in order. But how things are looking now, it's not how it has been, how it was supposed to be. But let us look at this news and come back shortly, especially when it comes to health bill. And also the question we asked yesterday is that when other countries are signing a health deal with US, which to me is not a problem. The problem is the condition. Are the conditions selective? Or other countries that sign health deal with US and they did not say anything, they have already given their data. Because the world now is looking at data. People are not looking at other aspect anymore. They are looking at the data infrastructure. Because if you have information, if you have data, you can control the direction of the world. But Zambia said no. Zimbabwe said no. Kenya signed a deal. Rwanda signed a deal. Other countries signed. The question is that did they sell their data for that deal? Because there is nothing for free. And US is very clear to say this is what they want. We give you money, we support your health system, you give us your health data. And it's also the question that we should also ask ourselves, did you also get that assistance or is not a problem, particularly looking at that aspect. But let us look at the case of Kenya and come back shortly, especially when citizens are saying no and the president is saying yes. For how long is going to be push and pull? And how many times there were protests in Kenya since Ruto came to power? You know what is very interesting is that all the protests, they have proven that citizens have more power, because the first protest that was led by Generation Z, that ended up to the President Ruto just dissolved the whole cabinet and I think left with, only with one secretary, if I'm not mistaken. Dissolve the whole cabinet. And the other aspect is also that just a month ago, there was again protest of the increment in the price of diesel. It was a bit deadly. But in that aspect, you also realize that the government also has to go back and reverse it. When it comes to the third protest that also I have seen somebody shot in the head, is it going to be reversing or is it only going to be decision made of protest? But let's look at this news and come back shortly.
Yuki is due to... Tensions flare in central Kenya as protesters clash with police over plans to build an Ebola quarantine center for U.S. citizens. Officers fire tear gas and make arrests in Nanyuki, where residents say they fear the facility could pose risks to the local community.
We are saying no to Ebola in Laikipia. We won't accept our motherland to be defiled by previous diseases zenye hazijaikwa kwa hii nchi yetu. So we are rejecting Ebola and we are saying the American gonna take their Ebola and go back to their country.
How can you bring it here in Nanyuki? And yet our healthcare system is not yet in good condition. Our social health authority is in a very bad situation. How can you entertain a disease and yet you are not prepared Kenya is not prepared for Ebola. Kenya is not prepared. It should be taken to Trump in USA.
The center of Laikipia Air Base in the town of Nanyuki is due to have 50 isolation beds and be managed by U.S. staff. Kenya says the Ebola facility will serve both Kenyans and Americans, backed by $13.5 million in U.S. support.
Yeah, that is what's happening. You can see that. The grandchildren of the people of Jomo Kenyatta, they are not happy. They are saying it's not going to happen. They are saying they are not ready. But you can also see that citizens are defiant. Because if you are not fighting for your country, nobody can come and fight for your country. So how can you bring a center where there is already a broken system, where the system cannot handle already? And for how long Africa is going to become a testing ground? Because yet there is no case of Ebola in Kenya. But the possibility is very high when you are bringing people to test coming from that. Then you bring a lot of problems, particularly when it comes to the health system. And one thing that we also see that in most cases, when there is something which is happening, particularly in relationship, there is always a number being mentioned. There is always a number. There is always money being mentioned. And when in Africa, when the money is being mentioned, dignity, the pride of the country, the future of the country is most likely to be compromised because people look at the numbers. People look at the numbers. It was the other thing also when we have these new industries. There are a lot of numbers being mentioned, but people look at the numbers to say, no, can you see? There's a lot of money that is going to come into the country. But a little attention is given to the environment. Little attention is given to the people. Little attention is given to, to the side effect of these things. Because if you only look at the numbers, numbers do not bring anything, particularly when it comes to finance, because there is an aspect of utilization. There's also an aspect of who is going to be in control. When somebody put billions of dollars in constructing of that Ebola center, who is going to construct it? Is it really Kenyan authority? Or is it also somebody who's going to benefit from that deal? And also at the end of the day, where the equipment's going to come from? And what control do you have over that aspect? Now, there's a very interesting news that is happening. Not only interesting, it's actually disappointing. Especially coming to our Judicial Service Commission. The Judicial Service Commission of Namibia has indicated that those who, were interviewed, particularly who wrote a written, a test for possession of a PG, all of them, all eight shortlisted candidates, they did not meet the threshold, that is 50%. And this is really something that, it says a lot of things about where we are as a country. To say how come all the eight shortlisted candidates score below 50% in the written assessment. Because if you shortlist eight candidates for the position of a PG, it means that you shortlist the best lawyers, the best advocates, the best experienced people. Is this assessment a real assessment? Or is it out of this world? Now we don't have a capable prosecutor general so far in Namibia, apart from the one that is leading. We don't have, a candidate yet, because all the 80 did not score above 50%. But what is also very interesting is that the Judicial Service Commission indicated that The highest score was 49%, while the lowest was 30%. That already shows you that there is a delay in the process of recruiting the next prosecutor general. And if you look at for how long the current prosecutor general have been in power, is it not the 20 years? And why are we taking so much time? Do you really want to tell me that we do not have people that can pass the test? How did these people get their qualification, Vaifa? How did they pass, how do they call it, GTC or the bar exam? In other words, how do they pass, certification of them becoming lawyers? So this is a message that is given to Namibia that when it comes to the recruitment of a PG, we still do not have a capable candidate by far, because the recruitment process will start over. Then it's the same question that you should also ask with the ACC, that in our term is coming to an end, but the recruitment of a Director General for Anti-Corruption Commission and a Deputy Director General did not start yet. There is still a delay. And that says a lot about the functionality of our system. And also, it also says a lot about our succession plan too. To say why all these people, did they not work hard? Did they not read? Are they not coming from the field? And are we going to have a possibility that we are going to have a prosecutor general from outside the country? Because if you shortlist the best 8, these are the best people in terms of, shortlisting in the country. But if you are not able to pass the test, I don't know who set the assessment. I don't know the HR team that set that that test. And it's scary. It's also scary to look into the future to say, can we really not have somebody who is capable? Or is just the system itself? And it's stated that the written examination has been, it was testing the capability in terms of the knowledge of the legal knowledge, in terms of legal reasoning, and also application of, legal principles, particularly in deciding of matters. So, in short, there's no prosecutor general candidate yet, because the process will start over. How long is going to take? That is yet to be defined. It's going to take 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, because you can't have a country without a PG. And when the term of Mme Malta comes to an end, I think she will be given another addition until you come to the point of finding the right candidates. But it's a concern, but it's also something that need to be handled. But the other aspect is also the thing of why can't aspect was used, especially when it comes to South Africa. They always have this public interview. There is this public interview, and it's very interesting also to see when you are appointing a NPA head, it's always public interview, parliament or the Judicial Service Commission. When you have judges before they are appointed, when you have chief justice before they are appointed, they have to stand in public. Why can't we make that also public? To say, if there is a prosecutor general going to be interviewed for position, can that be public? Because it's easy to hold the person accountable, because things behind closed doors, somebody can come and say, no, I'm coming from an interview, but I think, no, I was the best candidate. There are those things that you come from an interview, think you did it, but you just did not do it because nobody was watching, but you were messing up. Can we do also this public? Even the thing of the next director general of ECC. Let it be public. Let people come and be asked in public, because this is a public office. And let things, at least be fair. That is at least what would take us somewhere. Let's look at the caller and come back shortly. Good morning.
Morning, David. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. I actually got disconnected from, I think, 6:30 there.
Oh, okay.
But I did follow you from the beginning. But before we get into Kenya.
Yeah.
I know that Kenya is a troubled sea.
Yeah.
So it has been like that, and then it's not going to be handled properly.
Yeah.
It can turn into serious social and political chaos. When I was listening to the president of Kenya,
yeah,
when they met recently with the president of South Africa.
Mm.
So, in a way, one can understand that, yes, maybe it's true that maybe by doing that, maybe you might think that it's really a very big issue.
Mm.
But when the entire deal,
yeah,
which I believe includes that element,
yeah,
that's where the problem is, might be. Yeah. But I'm not going to talk about those things. What I'm saying is on the global.
Okay.
Yeah?
Do you know that all your candidates for prosecutor general position, they failed the test?
All what?
All the candidates for the prosecutor general position in Namibia.
All the candidates.
Yeah, they failed the test apparently. Below 50%.
For the prosecutor general.
Yeah, they failed the written test. We are going to restart over again. Is that?
Who are those guys? Are you talking about the ballistic, the really jurists?
No, I'm also concerned because if you are shortlisted for a PG, you are better than a lot of people.
But, yeah, you are better.
But all of them, apparently, nobody got above 50%.
I'm telling you.
Aye.
So we need to protect the criminal justice system.
Something is not right at all.
There's nothing that's not right. Just do the right thing.
There is no way you have the best 8 people in Namibia that did not only study law, but practice and understand how the law is operating. At the end of the day, they got below 50%.
Who was the examiners, those people, and it's not only one examiner.
No, the examiner is the Judicial Service Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you see how is the composition of the judicial so you can see, and it's not, and that one is not, is made up of all those, even from the lawyers, from the different experts.
Yeah, because Judicial Service Commission is also the body that recommend the appointment of judges and legal professionals. How come you are not making it? Who is going to make it if the best 8 that we put forward, nobody passed the test? Where are the other going to come from?
So are there no people who are already in the system who are doing that?
In terms of what?
You know, so I'm saying that that position is going to be vacant, or it's vacant.
Yeah.
So now, if it is vacant, and I'm sure there's somebody who's doing the job there, the transfer of power there. So, and I believe that they are still, I'm not saying that those who failed, because not that they failed, but they got that the most percentage. But the people who are there, the prosecutor general, so I know if he's gone already. If he's gone already.
No. She was retained for I think 12 months.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Because the term is ending this year, at the end of the year.
Just extended, most, eh?
Yeah, with 1 year. But still, there is no candidate yet. Maybe if we did not find a candidate until the end of the year, maybe she's going to be extended again. I don't know.
Yeah, so I think for me, my best approach to that is that there should have been somebody who was, understanding. There's also that understanding. The time that she has been there, she might have groomed, or maybe we could have done that approach if it's not done, so that it's not only one person or two or three.
You know what is very interesting about the PG position and the many other positions is that it's not a succession plan that you can say, no, we are giving... preference because this person have institutional memory or he was a deputy PG, for example. You go back and compete with other people. Even if you are competing and you fail the test, that is what is happening.
Yes, no, it's fine. I understand you because that concern because everywhere, even at universities, everywhere, in every structure, you should have somebody who's also there. I'm not saying that
to assist,
the position can take place.
To assist them.
I mean, there are people who might have been assisting here.
No, assisting is not a problem. The problem is that a capable candidate to run the institution for the next 5 years.
So you must train more people, and because I have no problem with that.
But how come
they are going to rewrite again, isn't it?
No, they are not going to. No, the process. No, you failed the test already. The process is just to restart again. Recruitment will start.
Just like the way
they must apply again.
Must apply again.
Yeah.
So as long as the work is going on there, because there are a lot of cases that are pending. Yesterday we were talking about issues of arbitration, issues of all these kind of things. But I think as long as the system is transparent, people have public trust in it, and it's not going to be manipulated like the way we are seeing in South Africa.
Okay, let's hope we get a better candidate, because I trust there is a lot of Namibian lawyers there. Who are supposed to apply, but let's see how things are going to turn out.
All those lawyers.
These are legal minds. Yeah.
These legal minds from different law organizations, societies. They are all there. And they set up those questions. And after they have set up those questions, they know the answer also. So now, if those people couldn't make it, I don't know where they came from.
Was it made it too difficult or what?
It cannot be too much difficult. That cannot be impossible to pass. So because the answer to that
it's not even passing. Just get 50%. Imagine if there were two who got 50%, then they could have gone. Apparently, the highest one got 49. The lowest got 30. They are just there in the middle.
So sometimes I listen when I listen to those inquiries and all this other thing. Now that you are the one who actually introduced me to the Madlanga inquiry and many other inquiries.
Yeah, but one thing I have seen also is that when you don't have authority, it's different. Imagine a judge being interviewed and so shivering. Have you seen that too? Because when you're on the other side, you are just an ordinary person. I have seen it with South Africa to say somebody can be a judge of a high court for 20 years, want to become a judge president. The person is asked question, is shivering or stuttering? It's true, because at the end of the day, we are all human beings. Yeah, but yeah.
That's why there's a time when you look at I've sat in those interview panels.
Yeah.
And and there was a time that I cannot say something, but there was a time that we from the same profession, seated far, 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 far from there and many others.
Yeah.
So, and then the one candidate actually scored more because he understood the subject matter. And others were maybe those 49 and others there. And they came to... So the point is that we have to say, why is it that you and this one call this person almost the same mark? So far, because the person understood the subject and they were trying to complain and things like that. So you need, in the interview, so you need to prepare yourself, not only for the subject matter there, but the whole interview from the beginning and all this. How, why do you have to shave? It's because, you know, that part, that emotional.
I think it's just a matter of not having authority, because I'm putting it this way. Even Madlanga himself, he looked confident that he's sharing the commission. If they don't catch up with him and he end up on the other side, he will also be there not answering all the questions. Do you understand?
I understand. Yeah. Because if you are not telling the truth.
Yeah.
It's not about
the truth. I think it's just a matter. It's a nature of thing. When you don't have that power, I think it's just you become an ordinary person.
No, this is exactly what we began with. So when in that power, you position yourself in that position with that authority, with that power that is entrusted in you.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't say, no, because this judge is, no, you have got that authority already within yourself. Mm-hmm. And the confidence that you have, why should you be timid and intimidated?
But when you become, when you become a suspect, you will not behave like a judge. Do you know that?
Yeah, no, maybe that might be a different thing. So, yeah. But anyway, I think it's fine. Let's see how the process will go. I didn't have that knowledge. Just told me.
Okay.
So was it also made public?
Yeah, it's public. It's communication from the Public Service Commission to say no.
Yeah, the problem is that you are always denying people your telephone.
What
yesterday,
is it?
Somebody was asking your telephone. He said, hey, give me a telephone. I'll send it. That's how you do.
I gave it, I said, ask Tate France to give you my number. Then,
no, mine is, I asked Tate France for many years now. Maybe you have cooked something there and say, don't give him. But you are mental.
You must come to the office.
Now, how do I come to the office when I'm here in Okongo now?
You are in Okongo, ne?
I'm just telling you this kind of things, but I'm not in Windows now to get it. I could come to your office. I've been coming to your office. It's just you that you have never seen me there. I sat down there in your where you are seated now there.
Oh,
yes. So okay. This is our home. So now where do we start now? It's concluded actually. So we were talking about you waiting for the research. Let me just jump to the research issue.
Yeah.
The data and things like that. You say some guest will come and tell and give us more on that part, isn't it?
On infrastructure.
In the research. On the, yes.
Yeah.
Data on the infrastructure. So yesterday I was listening to Professor Anasia Peter.
Yeah.
Who joined Global Research.
Yeah.
And she's now talking about how she can coordinate all those efforts, initiative, research, undertakings, and all these other things. And now in the infrastructure that we are talking about.
Hold on.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Yeah?
No, what I'm saying is that we shouldn't really have problems. To embark on research in order to solve problems.
Yeah.
Because these are academic things that people are talking about, and you are talking about the coordination. So the coordination, I think, is very crucial. Many of the issues are fragmented.
Yeah.
Is that the correct word?
Oh, you are doing very well.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Give me some good mark there. I don't want you to...
No, you got above 50%.
So, please, this is a global kind of issue.
Yeah.
And I know she, the professor has been at UNAM. She has been in my lecture in most of my modules.
Okay.
So I'm saying that many a times when we're just talking about graduate, like the other time, and we're also talking about this thing. So there are so many problems that we need to sort out, economic problems, political, and all these other issues. I'm just holding that maybe is it there any way to just sensitize them about that thing? It's just that I did not get the thing, but she's talking about all the institutions, our learning in all the sectors. This is a global kind of a program. So now we need to perhaps see, she was in the NBC, I think it's to Popeye or whatever.
Okay.
So let's see how we can coordinate our efforts.
Yeah.
But please be informing me about that program. I don't want to miss it again. So I did not miss the one for the CN, Electoral Commission, you know, those ones who were presenting their whatever.
Well, that one you're watching, ne?
Yeah, that one I watched. But this other one is so important, I did not.
Who are you putting your money on?
On which? Those ones?
Yeah, all of them.
I think I've even forgotten them. I've seen their faces and things like that. But they are all doing well.
Okay.
So, but like we said, that the part, apparently it was also mentioned, the part of our daily obligations, where our rights end and the limitation and all this. Some of these things are being understood the way I'm just looking at it. Because if we do not understand democratic principles, find our rights and things like that, but do we really have some kind of agency, the sense of agency in when it comes to our responsibility or obligation?
It's a good question.
That's where I'm failing a little bit, but I said I did not hear it properly, but of course it maybe it came in. But, you know, you and Juju said it came in. So thank you very much, David. Let me go and look for my credit. I think maybe my data is tricky.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah, we continuing with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And also to say, let's institution have the heads, because if we speak about institutional coherence, we must not have acting heads, because if in Namibia, if I have to tell you how many acting leaders do we have, you realize that almost 50% of many institutions, acting interim. You know, when you look at Namdia, we have acting head. You look at Anida, you have acting head. You look at Mitko, you have acting head. You look at Green Hydrogen Program, we have is it acting or interim? Look at the ACC. The term is coming to an end. Look at PG. It's term come to an end. It's just, additional. And you're asking yourself a question to say, why can't we have a permanent head of institution so that we can move correctly? So that we can move, properly? Because if we don't do that, then it's very difficult to implement what you want to implement. Because acting, no one will be held accountable. If you look at, is it NWR also acting? How many institutions also people are just acting? What does that say about our governance? in terms of our institution, either it's state agencies, either it's SOEs, either it's local authorities. But everybody is acting, everybody is interim. Somebody is on suspension. And you see all the best lawyers in Namibia, they failed the interview. It's not only disappointing, it's concerning to say if we have a future prosecutor general who is not an A student, how are they going to deal with complicated matters? How are we going to finalize things that are not finalized? Because if you look at things that happen in Namibia, and the people are not held accountable, you ask yourself questions. Ask yourself questions to say, what is really happening? But something that we need to look at. So let's look at a short commercial break. Then we look at our guest. From there, we can also look at the Villager newspaper. What do we have today? The Villager newspaper. And move forward. Stay tuned. We are here until the hour of 8.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
staff. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
the early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM,
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Chombe. As I indicated, that we'll be joined by our guest today, especially to look at Africa and its infrastructure, particularly the trade infrastructure. We'll be joined by Theo Nakasore. He's an economic researcher and also a senior analyst, particularly in the area of business and also sustainable development, just to help us unpack the African Finance Cooperation Report 2026, and also to look at when it comes to trade, is Namibia in Africa at large. Theo Nakasore, good morning, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop. How are you doing, Chief?
Yes, good morning, Mr. David, and very much glad to have me this early in the morning, and to all the Eagle FM listeners as well.
Let's look at Africa and also the trade. Everybody is speaking about diversification of trade. Everybody is speaking about the future of the Africa that they want, Agenda 2063 and Africa Continental Free Trade Area. But at the center of that, there is the aspect of enablers of trade, that is trade infrastructure. I want to get your view before we go into the matter. How is Africa progressing in terms of developing its infrastructure, particularly that enabling trade? You can speak about general, then you can also come to Namibia in terms of enabling trading.
Yes, well, thank you very much for the question. And to kickstart this conversation, let me just emphasize to say, you know, a strong infrastructure is really a crucial factor for productivity and growth in most of the economies. And
yeah.
For Africa, there is a need for an adequate infrastructure and strong connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
In order to secure your energy, your transport, your reliable communications and systems.
Mm.
So now to delve deep into your question, so far Africa is heading into the right direction, but there's a most critical question as to whether this type of infrastructure that we are advocating for, that we would like them to unite us, you know, who are they are meant for. So I think those are some of the critical factors. But just to highlight and pinpoint, you know, some of the progress so far, I do understand that most of the people, they heard of some of the big infrastructures which are taking place, like the Lobito Antarctic Railway, which is about 1,300 kilometer brownfield corridor, meaning these are just some of the infrastructures which are linking countries like Angola's, DRC, Zambia, Copper Belt, you know, through some of these landlocked countries. And also, if you were to come down to countries like Namibia, we have expansion of port, you know, infrastructure, especially at Valdez, and also at Luderitz, to accommodate, you know, extra container terminals and also meant for a green hydrogen products that the country is now embarking on. So the question here really is about how do we ensure that we bridge that gap, you know, to ensure that we have efficient, you know, system in place. Because I don't want to really much expand more on the first question, but you know, if you heard, I was listening to people like Aliko Dangote being interviewed, and he was saying that it's more cheaper to ship goods from Europe to Lagos than to ship goods from Lagos to Accra. So that tells you that. So that tells you that in Africa, it's not about geography. It's not a geography question. It's about the efficiency of the system to make, to ensure that whatever, you know, infrastructure that we have, they don't just, you know, benefit people abroad, but they should really mean for, you know, the Africa to unlock those opportunities.
While we are there, especially when you speak about, you know, Lagos and Accra, or maybe to say intra-Africa trade, just hold on, let's go to, into a commercial break, then we come back shortly. Particularly expanding on that. So just stay on the line.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts, working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today. Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
We are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. I'm joined by Tio Nagasore, a senior analyst in the area of economics and trade. But Tio, let's look at the other aspect, because there has been a debate to say Namibia and other African countries, they develop their trade infrastructure, For example, we expand our port. EU is always boasting about Lobito Corridor. And, when you go to that side of the Horn of Africa, there are also, you know, countries that are boasting about ports, but, are this really development made for the benefit of Africa? Are our trading partners, such as EU, such as other African, international partners, having Africa in mind when they are assisting us, or is just to ship out our raw materials, if I have to put it that way?
Yes, thanks very much. It's a very interesting question, of which I think everybody, you know, can ask those kind of questions. The problem here, it's not infrastructure. Really, yes, we need infrastructure.
Yeah.
But also we need to find out what are some of the challenges that African countries that are facing, you know.
Yeah.
We have are facing with high unemployment, poverty, you know, with a trade deficit. So, and also just to touch on the trade deficit, here, according to the Export-Import Bank report, they indicated that, you know, only 15% of total, you know, goods are being traded within Africa, compared like to 67%, which is, you know, being done in Europe, 59% of Asia, and 31% in North America. So now that tells you also the problem that what kind of, you know, goods and services, you know, that are going to be transported or that are going to be utilized through some of these infrastructures.
Yeah.
Africa is really much more known for, you know, extractive industries.
Yeah.
That means now, like, if you have this kind of, you know, mode of infrastructures which are being made in Africa, and whatever, you know, goods and services that are being done there are only in raw form.
Yeah.
That means that we are also transporting jobs, and, you know, and the opportunity for industrialization is not going to take place. And I think, you know, our African leaders, they really need to also integrate or, you know, pose that question as to say, how do we ensure that we capitalize on this infrastructure that we are embarking on in order to achieve, you know, things like the Agenda 2063. So those are some of the critical questions that really need to ask ourselves. Because, for instance, you have the Lobito Corridor, just to give an example, where it's going to be utilized especially to ship things like your copper, your manganese, your cobalt, you know. And some of the final products for those things are like, you know, electric vehicles, your batteries, and so forth. So these things are only going to feed most of the other, you know, continents, while we remain impoverished, due to the fact that we really play less. I mean, we play less in terms of adding value, value addition, and also in terms of ensuring that we upgrade or we put up infrastructures that can enable to unlock some of the challenges that we have in Africa. I think that's the most.
It's a very good thing that you put it that way, because I'm also always asking myself to say, if you speak, for example, to say product that, raw material that we sell, the final product, and even, for example, electrical vehicle, for example, my question is that are African leaders, when they visit Europe, when they visit Asia, when they visit South or North America, do they visit those industries also to see what our raw materials do? Or do they just go and attend conference? Let me say, if we go to France, or we go to Canada, or we go to China, do African leaders get an opportunity to say, no, we want to visit a uranium plant to see what our products can do? Or maybe we can also find ways how many jobs were created on the other side. Maybe we can get that picture. What is your view on that before we move on?
Yes. Yes, to answer, yes, they said development is a process.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you don't want to sit with a good policy or to have good policy that are just getting, you know, dust on the shelf.
Yeah.
Some of the things are being mentioned, especially if you read the Africa 2063 report, if you look into some of the SADC report, if you look into some of, you know, the economic block report, like your ECOWAS, your SADC, your EAC, your COMESA, you know, they talk about, you know, integration, industrialization, and value additions.
Mm.
You know, but you don't really see it, you know, happening.
Mm.
So how many years now since, let me say, 1990? Mm. But still you have your uranium, you have your diamond, you have, you know, some of these things are being used in other countries, you know, to come up with finished products.
Mm-hmm.
So our question is, how do we ensure that we attract, you know, not only extractive investment? When I'm talking about extractive investors, these are people that only want to mine and export. You want to attract also, you know, manufacturer investors. You want to set up industries, because by the moment you set up industries, it will have much more spillover or multiplier effect, you know, in the economy, whereby, because if you look into extractive industry, for instance, like in the mining, those are capital intensive industries. Meaning it require much more of capital for machineries and so forth. But if you have infrastructure, these are manufacturer, these are more of a labor intensive industry, where you want to have like your tailor and other so forth. I think those are some of the things that we need to champion and to ensure that we integrate them, not only on the regional, you know, report, but also even on the national development plan as well.
Yeah.
So we would like to see this coming, but we will only be able to see the progress if we have proper KPIs in place to ensure that we track the progress.
It's a very good thing that you brought the issue of KPI and also tracking progress where we are going. Now let us look at the context of Namibia and the readiness. I like the plan of NDP-6, and I'm always referencing NDP-6, and I want it to be fully implemented. But at the center of NDP-6, and also the pronunciation, either of our president or also our industrial leaders, is economic diversification. Yesterday I was looking at International Trade Statistics report of April. But compared to 5 years ago, you realize to say we still have the same main trading partners. We still say so the same thing. Our top 5 export did not much change. But I want to get it from you. You do research more on economic affairs. Maybe you can also educate us to say, in the context of Namibia, how is the country's readiness? Either it's business, it's regulations, and also its institution, especially implementing of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Thank you very much.
Mm.
Coming to Namibia, yes, Namibia is has a very small population, you know, by size, but it has some sort of key strength, the way you have your you know, stable political environment.
Yeah.
Of which those are some of the things that, you know, investor would like to ensure that they are in place in before they make, you know, the next step.
Yeah.
And looking at the infrastructure, we have a good infrastructure, especially when it comes to road and others.
Yeah.
But still there is a need for a greater connectivity, especially when it comes to railway. Also to ensure that, as I have indicated, there are developments which are taking place, both at Valves and also at Luderitz, for instance, to have infrastructure that will be able to accommodate things like the green hydrogen development that are taking place. And also some of these things about Namibia is that they are well emphasized also on our latest national development plan, which is NDP-6, which speaks about agro-processing, speaking about fisheries, speaking about manufacturing, it's speaking about energy, telecommunication, and services.
Yeah.
So those are competitive, you know, potential areas where if you want to move your country, you know, forward.
Yeah.
But as I said, all it lies in terms of implementation.
Yeah.
And I could also emphasize that if you remember last year, in June, Namibia officially also launched its first, you know, export consignment under the African Continental Trade Area to Nigeria.
I see.
You have remember of that. So those are some of the areas that indicated that, yes, we are moving toward that.
Mm-hmm.
But still there are some sort of area that need to be championed, as you said, especially when you talk about we have oil and gas industry, which is still at its infancy stage. We have things like your green hydrogen, which are also still at their infancy stage. But now you ask yourself a question as to if some of this industry happen to mature, are we able to see, you know, or to reap the benefits, you know, be it through opportunities, employment, be it through a cheaper product and so forth. Because, for instance, you have your oil and gas industry and you don't have, let me say, a refinery plant. That tells you also that it will also require you to export, you know, this oil crude, you know, in raw form to other countries, you know, for processing. Then you import the finished, you know, product. Then it will also, you know, cost you to have an imbalance in terms of your trade. That's why now, even currently, we have an issue of the skyrocketing of oil, you know, and gas prices. Simply because, you know, we rely much more on oil import, you know, from other countries. Because I was reading a latest report also on that, whereby we have a trade deficit of 4.4 billion, and 70% of that is made up, by oil. So it also tells you that we need those kind of infrastructures. We need to ensure that, how do we ensure that in 10 years, in 20 years, we have a proper refinery plan in place? So those are some of the key areas that we need to ensure that we tick some of those boxes, to ensure that we don't repeat the past 36 years, you know, of independence, and we move ahead toward the developed countries.
One more before we look at the conclusion. But looking at the Africa Finance Corporation report, it's looking as to say, no, Africa external investor is not really a problem. Infrastructure may not really be a problem. The problem is connectivity. Do we still have a fear of each other as Africans, particularly in terms of sharing of resources? What is your view on intensifying infrastructure connectivity in Africa, especially to accelerate trade and also keep you know, resources in the continent?
No, I like your question, but let me not give you a little bit kind of. I like the history of how when people were talking about the United Africa, the Kwame Nkrumah them, the Julius Nyerere them, you know, Kwame Nkrumah was saying we need to have, you know, one country, one currency, you know. Then Julius Nyerere in Tanzania was saying, I think we need to do these things gradually. We need to grow our economic block by block, where he mentioned things of like, let's have the SADC, let's have the ECOWAS, let's have the COMESA, let's have, you know, these are some of the economic blocks that, you know, Julius Nyerere was talking about, in order to integrate now at the end of the day some of this country, I mean some of this block together to have, you know, to have one Africa. That was, you know, back then, the African leaders, you know, a vision. But still, you know, I don't know how many years have passed by. But you can still that despite this kind of economic block that we have, you have your SADC, you have your, you know, ECOWAS and so forth. You can still see that instead of integration, there's still some sort of, you know, not friction, but you don't really see it happening, you know, except to the African Continental Free Trade Area. Because remember, when you trade with other countries, they have their own, you know, they change their own tariffs, they change their own, you know, taxes and so forth. And some of this, you know, system, you know, milk, you know, trade to be more costly. That's why I was giving you an example to say, people like in Nigeria, they feel it's more cheaper to, you know, to make trade with Europe than, I mean, and expensive to make, you know, trade with other African partners.
Indeed.
Because of this, because of this protracted process. Because regardless whether you have a train which shipped good, you know, from Namibia to, let me say, to the border of, you know, Botswana and so forth.
Yeah.
If there are some sort of a bottlenecks there, then that is already an issue because it hampers both on the supplier and also it hampers also in terms of the cost which is there. Because you want to have a trade which is both at a very good speed and which is efficient. But if you have all those things involved, I mean, things those that are hampering those kind of, I mean, trade, then at the end of the day, you don't really see, you know, the good things happening. But we should give it the benefit of doubt that with the right leaders, with the right policy, you know, at the end of the day, we'll be able to see light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, Tiona Gasore, just last one. You spoke about KPI, just last one on monitoring and evaluation, just 2 minutes on it. Namibia, we are struggling with progress tracking. We have always been known to have good policies. We never lack in terms of drafting. We never lack in terms of strategic plans. But after the term come to an end, after 5 years, after 3 years, we focus on another plan. Why there is much gap between tracking of progress and also, development of the country? If you have to put the relationship between what you plan and also what you do, why do you think it's like that? From the research point of view, why do you think that is still a problem in Namibia? I was so shocked to me, last year when I attended, for example, there was a public-private sector, forum where the president stayed there for 2 days. Then at the end of the day, the DG for National Planning said, I don't want to put you on the spot, said, no, we are going to intensify monitoring and evaluation. Then come end of the day, he said, no, we did not receive data from ministry and all these things. Where is that problem coming from, especially just in Namibia in general, in terms of progress tracking and also see what pace we are moving into?
No, thanks. I'm glad that you happen to have the same analysis or look at the things as I also analyze them. But, you know, the problem is it's not only economical, but it's also political base.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I used to emphasize to say, like, especially in Namibia, I don't think if we have really much of a regulatory framework issues,
mm-hmm.
We are not running out of national development plan, you know, we have everything in place. But at the end of the day also is that, every leader comes with their own plan, comes with their own vision. Just like now we have the latest National Development Plan 6, which is just a component for our vision 2030.
Yeah.
But also, you have your SWAPO Party Manifesto Implementation Plan, you know, which talks about what the president wants to achieve.
Yeah.
But I think from my side, it's quite good because you don't want to push or to grow an economy or to develop your country without any proper framework in place.
Yeah.
But the only problem comes when another, leader, take over.
So, yeah.
So there have to be, how should I say, a streamlined kind of a framework to measure the progress and to ensure that, whatever things that we were working on,
you build on,
they are being taken over to the next level. Because at the end of the day, you will end up having more plan, but less implementation. Because, when one person comes, starting new things, and the other process, which was already being championed by another person, ends. And I think that is also part of, you know, the challenge that we are faced with. But at the end of the day, there have to be a mechanism in place to ensure that there is a continuity in terms of progress, because there are some certain good things which can be, you know, done continuously without, you know, stopping them. And I think that's what need to be done. And the other last thing is monitoring and evaluation. Yes, you need to measure progress, because at the end of the day, regardless whether you have your good plan, you have your good vision, but you don't monitor it, you don't check the progress of how things are going, at the end of the day, it's like you have a vision, but you don't have any direction of where you want to go.
Yeah.
So I think those are some of the key areas that I think the government and other African countries, they need to coordinate, especially at some of those very important, you know, discussion that they normally have.
Yes, Tio Nagasore, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for input. And also thank you for analysis, and continue doing what you are doing.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Master David. It was great to have you.
All right, cool. Yeah, that is it's an economic researcher, senior analyst, and looking at the infrastructure, also looking at where we are as a country to say measuring progress is necessary. Investing in capital-intensive projects is not a problem, but we also need investment in labor-intensive projects, because the argument is that it's more difficult to sell to Rwanda than selling to UK, which there is a new trend now to say there's no amount of good English that can convince me that it's easier to take oil from the Middle East than taking oil from DRC or taking from Angola. And there's an aspect to say there's no amount of good English that it's easier to sell to Asia than selling to Zambia. But I think as a country we are getting there, but very, very slowly, until we come to the point of who is hindering that gear of investing in labor-intensive project, because labor-intensive projects, they take up more people than just investing in machinery. Because if you look at the mining sector, that was supposed to be our game changer, but the investment is still at the stratosphere level, still at the highest level, rather than looking and coming down to the people themselves. But yeah, let's look at a short commercial break. From there, we'll look at what is in the Villager newspaper for today. However, you can still engage us at 0832-888-401, 083-288-401. Stay tuned. We are here until the hour of 8.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal. Hello, good morning.
David, I'm back,
yeah? Oh, okay.
Well, just a minute, I won't take long.
Yeah.
So now, your conversation, it was very constructive.
Okay.
But now you mentioned one point there, because you are talking about the challenge of implementation. And one of the challenges that you mentioned, I think, is you said there's no continuity. Or what did you say? So, and I believe that that is the philosophy of when you find out in most of the slogan of most of the slogan, especially for SWAPO, say that yes, there is a need to sustain that stability and the continuity of implementing many of those declarations. And I believe that when you were now, I was just thinking of myself when you were talking about the prosecutor general position. And I was still going to that the situation, I say, when now your guest mentioned that, yes, there is a need for continuity in the terms of implementation of many of those commitments. And if that is the case, because, please, I don't want to miss that those other things again. So make sure that you'll be updating me.
I'll inform you.
I'll give you my number.
I'll inform you.
You want me to repeat it again?
No. You can, I'll get, okay, just give it to me. Just hold on. Just hold on.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM.
Yeah, you can just give it, so it's fine.
081.
Yeah.
27.
Yeah.
98. 374.
Okay.
So please, be giving me your thing, and don't make me to come to your office and give
the number. No. I'll give it. I will just even send it now.
So let's just end up here and let's make sure that people do not implement the most of this commitment. Because you call them what anti-revolutionary, or what do you
they
say?
They are counter-revolutionary.
is
you are the one who taught me.
Yeah, those are happening. So, okay, no brother, thank you very much.
All right. don't be a counter-revolutionary. People are looking at, finding a way to develop the country. And you are counter-revolutionary. It's not correct. But yeah, let us look at what we have, in the Villager newspaper for today. On top of the Villager newspaper, indication to say restraint alone cannot deliver physical improvement. Strong economic growth and public investment is required. If you are restrained, economic restraint will not deliver, physical improvement, but public investment is required. That is, from page 1 to page 2. When you look at page 3, study at UNAM 2027 application is now open. University of Namibia say education is the greatest equalizer. No matter the situation on the jungle, go to school, go and learn, go and study. There are a lot of courses in Namibia. In Namibia, I say education is subsidized. Although there was a fight between students and NASFAF, and also the Ministry of Education. And I say that I was reading the post of Tatedino Barotti, the Deputy Minister of Education. He apologized with the statement he made. He retracted the statement, particularly on misjudging the protest of students, which is actually a good thing. And it's rare to see a leader. If you find a leader in Namibia who can come and say I was wrong, you must look at that person. Because apologizing is a very good thing, because it shows that you are genuine. But there are people in Namibia, even after 20 years, can just say, I'm correct, I'm correct. But if you made the mistake, you say, no, 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 I was standing at the wrong view. Or I did not look at it very well. But if you see a deputy minister apologizing, those are the people that we need to look at. But if you see somebody just stand up and say, no, 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 I was correct even in 2014, in 2015, 16, 17, and 18, then you have a problematic person here. But if somebody stood up and said, no, he was wrong, disregarding the protest of students, because students throughout the history, they always fight for what is theirs. If there is subsidized education, money must come. Plus that refund must also come, so that people can fill the hole of poverty that has been burdening, that has been troubling them. But look at page 4, Africa must connect its fragmented trade infrastructure. Get that full version of the discussion. And looking at page 5, looking at page 5 stated that demystifying advanced subsidiary level, there is still degree of misunderstanding and lack of knowledge from parents and guardians when it comes to Namibia. And also AS level. But you can get that from page 5 moving forward. Page 6, virtual application. You want to be a lawyer. You want to study, you know, project management. You want to study education. Application is on. Application is on. Apply at Vervicha University. Yeah, looking at page 7, stated that regulating climate and supplying 70% of earth oxygen, the mighty roles of ocean, and analysis of not only blue economy, but also the aspect of, you know, oxygen, and also the aspect of climate regulations when it comes to oceans. Yeah, looking at page 8, stated that Parliament bemoans a lack of researchers. The chairperson of National Council Standing Committee, Lucas Muha, stated that there is a lack of parliamentary researchers at the National Council. During annual planning and budgeting session, Muha explained that researcher, legal advisors, financial experts are essential to strengthen oversight. But the institution is lack of researcher that can support the institution. Because I think every ministry needs researchers. Every ministry needs researchers. If banks have researchers, why public sectors does not have researchers? So that not only to give you insight, but also as a supporting arm. And also finding new insight, because you can't be in the industry and you are hearing things from the media. You are supposed to have raw data. You are supposed to be the one who is providing us with data, especially when it comes to that aspect. And you must have researchers that are on top of their game. Because one thing I respect about banks is that the banks, they see above, you know, the horizon. They see very far, because they know that if you are waiting for a surprise, it will affect your operation and also your profit. That's why they have researchers that look ahead, from the economy, legal affairs, systems, and also artificial intelligence too. But if you are just waiting for surprises, things will shock us. Researchers were supposed to see, what is going to happen in the next 6 months. When it comes to our oil industry, researchers were supposed to see what would happen when it comes to the green industry, what would happen when it's coming to, you know, even crime prevention, because everybody must be able to have that who can not only collect data, but also look at the future. And also presenting a scenario planning approach when things don't go right, or when things work on probability and possibilities, so that we protect institution from a lot of surprises. So, page 10, Virvicha University, Hope Home-Based Healthcare Sign Agreement to, strengthening student training. Get that content from page 10. And there is an opinionated paper from Dr. Esther Kari. Dr. Esther Kari is CEO of Letseho Bank. And people don't know that Letseho is a bank. Gave an opinion that why does 1 million car get paid off in 5 years, but 1 million house take 20 to 30 years? It's an opinionated paper by experts, that is Dr. Esther Kari, especially looking at that. Another aspect of opinionated paper is from Van der Merwe, Gerard Van der Merwe, who said source and free belong to every Namibian, not just one operator. And people are expressing their view and their opinion in the Villager newspaper. If you have an opinion, economic opinion, political opinion, developmental related opinion, you also have a right to write to the Villager newspaper. And that is exactly what is happening. Let's go to a short commercial break and come back shortly before we give the mic to the big mic to unpack the day.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle staff. FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
The early birds catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism. Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, it's 53 minutes past the hour of 7. And we are looking at issues of economic development. And today we are looking at trade infrastructure, where we are standing, and also where we are going, not only as a country, but also as a continent. And also, when are we going to see progress, especially in terms of development. You know, so maybe we want monitoring and evaluation, and we don't have experts in monitoring and evaluation who should come and teach us progress tracking, because we are in the 6th month of 2026, and when we get into the 7th month, forget already about 2026, because after June, when you are going to put in a handbrake, you're already going to be in 2027, and 2027 and 2028, then you are already in 2030. But it's not about being scared of what the future is hold. It's about tracking progress at real time, to say what is that we need to learn from the private sector, what is that we can learn from the bank. As far as Namibian farmers have a lot to learn from the Afrikaner, there's also much that public sector can also learn from the private sector, especially the financial institutions. Because the private financial institution, they don't only focus on the finance, they focus on effectiveness, and they track progress in real time. And the only institution that I also see that it is up to date, I think Bank of Namibia is also doing its best. But other than that, you find out that the records, the data, the information, they are either late, not produced on time, or people do not know who are supposed to produce it. Look, we are in June, and we still do not have 2025 tourism statistic report from the Minister of Environment. I continue to say that because it was promised to us, and I continue asking it until December, until we also get it, because it's already late. The other one was already late. In terms of tourism statistics, those who are in tourism sector, they will tell you to say the latest data that we have is 2024 data. But 2026 is going to come to an end. Maybe you are getting it this month, maybe next month. That is also telling you a lot regarding either we are on top of our game, or somebody is not doing his job, or somebody is not also bringing the data. Because sometimes when you are going to have a mid-year budget review, we should not blame Memesha Fuda when people are not presenting their data of progress within every ministry. We must also track to say who is not doing his work correctly, because at the end of the day, we cannot just say no midterm review. There are only few projects being reported. There are few breakdowns, because we are still on the breaking down. We are still on drafting. But the question that we should ask ourselves is that, when are we going to see real progress? When are we going to stop having 20,000 conferences, but having industry to say, when you speak about value addition, this is the factory. When you speak about agro-processing, this is the industry. When you speak about economic diversification, this is where we are going. When you speak about diversification of trade, this is how we penetrate the African market. When you speak about youth empowerment, this is the tracking of progress of youth and development fund. But yeah, that on its own bring us to the end of our conversation, and I'll leave you in the good hands of the Big Mic. Bye bye. See you around. Shab shab.